the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Fascinating email exchange. On one end of the email exchange, Steve Jobs of Apple Computers, perhaps the maestro of cool for American culture right now. One of the most influential chief executive officers, of course, in the technology industry and probably in the history of American business. On the other end of this email exchange, Ryan Tate, a young blogger who writes for Gawker.com, which is a New York City-based gossip site that has a special site dedicated to technology. And Mr. Tate was upset about what he saw as the controls on Apple's App Store, that is, the application store through iTunes that services and sells products for iPhones, iPods, and, of course, the iPad. His complaint was that Apple was far too restrictive. He said it violated freedom. Steve Jobs wrote back, and his response is one we're going to remember, I think. He wrote back saying, you want freedom? Well, I tell you what the App Store gives you, freedom from viruses, freedom from problems with your computer, and yes, he said freedom from porn, pornography. Mr. Tate wrote back saying he didn't want to be free from porn. He said porn is just fine, and Steve Jobs responded, well, that may change. Your evaluation of change of porn may change when you have children. Very, very interesting. Steve Jobs says freedom from programs that steal your private data, freedom from programs that trash your battery, freedom from porn, yep, freedom. And that got under the skin of someone who said he didn't want freedom from pornography. You know, what's really interesting here is what this tells us about the American society in which we live, about pornography. If you want to know exactly what this means, just in terms of a shot across the bow of the computer industry, consider the statement made by Eric Felton at the Wall Street Journal. He made very clear that in doing this, Apple impresario Steve Jobs is preparing to overturn one of the most basic assumptions of modern technology, that the computer business is built on pornography. Now, there's a lot to talk about here, and we're going to dedicate this program to that issue. But I wrote an article about what I consider to be the key issue. At AlbertMohler.com today, I posted an article entitled Pornography, The Difference Being a Parent Makes. Not really talking about Apple Computers so much or Steve Jobs, although that's the background to this, and I'm thankful that it is so. We're going to be talking about what it means for Steve Jobs to say to this man, you might think differently about pornography when you have children. You see, my argument is this. It makes a huge difference whether or not you are a parent. And in terms of worldview change, in terms of altering the way one looks at the world, I think it is difficult to come up with anything in terms of human experience that has a more significant direct effect than becoming a parent. The very moment you become a parent, everything changes. The moment you have responsibility for a child, for children, everything changes. Not only about your parenthood and your children, but by extension about other children as well. You look at the world differently. And I think it's very interesting that here you have one of America's, indeed one of the world's most influential chief executive officers, none other than Steve Jobs, saying, if you're a parent, you just might have a problem with porn. There's a whole lot that goes into this. I'd love to have you join the conversation. The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. A lot of response already to the article I published this morning. It's at albertmohler.com, entitled Pornography, The Difference Being a Parent Makes. It makes a huge difference. What you have here is the clash in American culture between parents and non-parents. Political scientists and sociologists long ago learned that if you want to predict electoral behavior, voting behavior, look at the single criterion of whether or not the voter is a parent with children in the home. That changes everything. Let's talk about why. From a Christian perspective, this ought to tell us something about the importance of the family. It ought to tell us something about the responsibility of parents. And, of course, it tells us something about the unique way that parents see the threat of pornography. I hope you see it as a threat. I hope you understand what's going on here. I hope you know why it's important we talk about it today. And that's why I want you to have this phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to get to your calls in just a moment. First, to review some other issues in the news. I talked a little bit about this last week, but now here we are on the very last day of a couple of major television programs, and in particular, Law and Order going off tonight. And I believe also 24, the final episode of all time. And so what you're looking at here, of course, the final episode of Lost last night. I'm going to tell you, I will be lost talking about Lost because I never watched the program. I get people asking me, what do you think? What's a Christian analysis of Lost? I don't have time to watch it in order to give one. I will tell you, I'll admit, I've watched Law and Order. And I found it very interesting. One of the reassuring things about Law and Order, the television program, is that it understood there is a difference between right and wrong. It was a pretty gritty look, both at the work of police and of prosecutors, but it never really tried to blur the reality that there is right and there is wrong. What all this means in terms of this rather significant series of days is that television still has a huge hold on the American imagination. I think that's interesting for us to note. In a day when so much entertainment is migrated onto the World Wide Web, in a day in which many people have less and less time to watch television, it turns out that dramas have held the attention of the American people more than just about anything else. Back in the 1960s and the 1970s, it was sitcoms that reigned. Lately, for the last decade or so, it has been serious dramas, crime dramas, espionage dramas, terrorism dramas. It tells you something, I think, about the tenor of the age. It tells you something about the kinds of issues that are pressing upon Americans that affect not only their larger worldview, but even their entertainment choices. So as you're watching some of these final programs of different things over the last several days and even tonight, just keep in mind, our television shows, our entertainments say a great deal about us. Big news, of course, has been coming out from the laboratory. Craig Venter and his associates are now claiming to have created the world's first synthetic or artificial bacterium, the first artificially designed and created life. Now, there is a lot to this. The cover story in The Economist that came out this weekend, and man-made life, the first artificial organism and its consequences. We're going to be talking on this program in coming days about what this does and does not mean. I'll be writing about it at my website because this is a big story. Frankly, its scale is something that may take some time to come to terms with. But the reality is, even as I've had several people have already called, several people have already written, let's be very clear. This is not artificially created life. Not in the sense that it just happened, because it just so happens that it took human beings to do this. It even took the exoskeleton, the mitochondrial skeleton of an old bacterium that came the old-fashioned way in order to do this. But just in terms of the laboratory manipulation of life, this is huge. In terms of biology and biotechnology, this is huge, and it opens all kinds of possibilities and, frankly, some fairly scary ones with the creation of bioterroristic weapons or something like that. There is much to talk about here, and we'll be doing that in coming days on this program. Very interesting things also in terms of advertising. In the financial pages of the New York Times, here's a headline, bleep or no bleep, bolder words blow in. Stuart Elliott writes that what is happening in advertising may fit into the context of what's going on in the larger culture. And that is that, bad words are creeping in. It so happens that for some particular advertisements, for trucks, for beer, and for feminine hygiene products, things have been said that have now crossed a certain line in terms of sexual explicitness and words that have been forbidden just in terms, not by law, but by custom, in terms of mass media, television, magazines, and broad-based advertisements. As Mr. Elliott writes, in other words, the days are long gone when the only arguments over language and advertising were centered on grammar, as when English teachers winced because Winston cigarettes tasted good like a cigarette should rather than as a cigarette should. We're not talking about grammar anymore. The controversy now is over the explicit language that is being used. And I will just have to tell you that for this program, that's going to have to suffice because I cannot read to you the material that is so explicit. But this is, after all, the New York Times. And it's telling us that the old gray lady of the American media, America's most influential newspaper, has taken note of the fact that our advertisements are becoming coarser and coarser and coarser. You see, I will make the argument, and I think you're going to agree with me on this, that not only is it true that our entertainments tell us a great deal about ourselves, but also our advertisements. In one sense, maybe even more acutely, our advertisements tell us who the advertisers think we are, what advertisers think will interest us and hold our attention. In the end, what advertisers think will lead us to make a purchase, to make a buy, to prefer their product over other products, or this product type over no product type. In the end, maybe our advertisements betray us more than we'd like to admit. We're going to come back to talk about why parenthood, being a parent, makes such a difference when you look at an issue like pornography. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. There are so many things that make a difference in the way we view the world. Being married changes our outlook on life. Sociologists are able to document this very clearly. If you're married, if you have a marital commitment and the covenant of marriage is a part of your worldview, if it becomes such a basic part of your life that you can't imagine yourself in any other way, in any other relationship, in any other context, well, that changes the way you look at the world. It changes the way you think about money. Changes the way you look at entertainment. Changes all kinds of things. But even more decisive, at least sociologically speaking, as measured by those who take a close look at things like voting patterns and purchasing patterns and time use patterns, is parenthood. The moment a man or a woman becomes a parent, boy, everything changes. And you know, I can remember that. I can remember leaving the hospital when our firstborn, Katie, had just been born. And it had been a few hours. I was there with Mary in the hospital, and I eventually had to go and take care of some relatives and get some things done. And as I was driving on the interstate, a truck crossed the lane in front of me. And, well, I instantly had one of those intimations of mortality. I thought, you know, that could have gone really badly. And I thought, you know, I can't afford for anything to happen to me. I've got a little girl in the hospital, a little baby. Well, just one little reminder of the fact that being a parent all of a sudden meant everything. Even though I'd only been a dad for a matter of hours, I'd only held her for a matter of minutes, already my entire world was changed. Now, from now on, everything that happened in my life happened to a dad. Everything I did in my life from that point onward, I did as a father, indeed as her father, and later as Christopher's father. And that just makes all the difference in the world. When it comes to pornography, we're living in the wild, wild west. We're living in a world in which the new digital technologies have led to an expansion by quantum dimensions of the availability of pornography. It has become, there's no other word for it. It's a big word. It's ubiquitous, which means it's everywhere. It's now in advertising. It's in the shopping malls. It's before us all the time. And then with the internet, it's nothing more than kind of like hooking up an IV to the cultural body and just infusing pornography. What used to be available only in shady, you know, back alleys is now just a couple of clicks away. And along comes this story. And when the story first broke, it was one of those that certainly grabbed your attention because, well, it's surprising. Steve Jobs, the chairman and cultural impresario at Apple. If any man represents cool in this society right now, it's Steve Jobs. And he was in an email exchange with Ryan Tate of Gawker.com when Ryan Tate wrote into Apple to complain about the restrictions on Apple's App Store for its iPod, iPads, and iPhones. And Steve Jobs, having been accused of limiting freedom, wrote back and said, "You want freedom?" He said this, that Apple gives freedom from programs that steal your private data, freedom from programs that trash your battery, freedom from porn, yet freedom. Well, it looks like, in all honesty, that when Steve Jobs wrote that, the pornography issue was there, but it wasn't his main point. But it became the main point when Ryan Tate wrote back and said, "I don't want freedom from porn. Porn is just fine." And then Steve Jobs sent back a remarkably insightful retort, informing Ryan Tate that he, quote, "might care more about porn when you have kids," end quote. Isn't that fascinating? A key insight. I think it's right. I have no idea if Apple's trying to make a major moral statement here. That's outside my ability to evaluate. We'll tell you this. They're making a commercial business decision, and that is, just as Eric Felton at the Wall Street Journal points out, parents are going to feel a whole lot better about their kids having iPhones, iPads, and iPods and going to the App Store if they know they're not going to have to worry about porn. So whether it's a moral decision or a simple business decision, the issue is that Steve Jobs said being a parent matters. Let's talk about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Why from a Christian perspective are we so certain that being a parent really does change everything? And why does that matter, and what does it tell us? Let's go to Sean, listening on the World Wide Web, calling in from Mesa, Arizona. What do you think, Sean?
Well, as being a born-again Christian man that I am, it greatly affects in how you look upon life and from a world view of perspective, because, you know, who wants a, say, 45, 50-year-old man, you know, like my daughter, she's 9 years old. I don't want some man looking at her in any way, shape, or form from that perspective at all. I mean, that's just utterly ludicrous and just vile and disgusting.
You know, Sean, you know, your very clear language, it just kind of nails this right to the board. So let's talk about this for a minute. Here's Sean talking about his 9-year-old daughter saying he doesn't want people looking at her having their minds shaped by pornography. And he mentioned older men. Frankly, you know, I think I'm right with you, Sean. You don't want 9-year-old boys who are going to grow up to be 16 and 17-year-old boys, along with your daughter, having their minds shaped by that. And the reason is because as a dad, and you mentioned as a believing, as a Christian dad, you've got a very strong protective instinct built in about your daughter. And, you know, let's be thankful that by general revelation, most dads get there. That's why having a dad in the home is so decisive for kids, because fathers have this protective instinct and protective role, which only they can fulfill. And only, let's just state this clearly, and ladies, please hear me, only a man knows the danger of pornography from the male side. And why that protective instinct has to be so clear in protecting his daughter from predatory males. Now, only a dad can really know that. Only a man can really know that. And the dad's also going to have some knowledge about pornography that's going to be very important for how he raises his son. But the protective instinct for his daughter is going to be a different application of that protective instinct. And I think that's absolutely key. Now, let's take Sean's point for a moment. Let's figure this out. Because Steve Jobs said to Ryan Tate that his view of pornography might change once he has kids, might well change. And you know what? I can only say I hope so. Because what happens then is that you realize people get hurt. Pornography hurts. It hurts the society at large. It corrupts those who are involved in it. And quite frankly, it turns women and girls into sex objects. It goes beyond that, of course, but just thinking of pornography in its classic expression. And it corrupts. It corrupts the sexual appetite. It violates the sexual interest. It brings something into human sexuality that simply should not be there, a knowledge that does not belong there. And a dad's going to have that very strong protective instinct. You know, this is one of the issues why we understand that God gave to children both a mother and a father. And unless removed by some tragedy, the father should be in the home and should be exercising this protective instinct. Now, as we said, by general revelation, by common grace, God has implanted this so that the average dad, believer or not, is going to have this by instinct once he is a dad. But by special revelation in the scripture, we have very clear assignments to Christian dads to understand why that is so important. Moms have a big role in this too. And just in terms of the ability to police all of this, moms have a very, very important role to play. And the moment a mom becomes a mom, you know it changes. That's why when you use the word mom rather than just the word wife or just the word woman, you know you're saying something of spectacular, earth-shaking importance. Does she have a different understanding of pornography? Well, you know she does. Let's talk about why it matters. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We have this conversation started. Let's take it from here. Let's figure out where it goes. What does parenthood tell us? Not only about why we look at pornography differently, but at just about everything else as well. Back with more. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. There are so many dimensions to this particular news story. And thinking about Steve Jobs and Apple Computer's decision to say no to porn in the app store is really interesting. For one thing, it tells us that at least someone out there in the larger culture, even in the creative elite, is ready to say there's something wrong with pornography. There's something troubling about pornography. It's not just like everything else. And in a society that has been defining pornography down for a long time, that's a pretty significant thing. Eric Felton, writing at the Wall Street Journal, is asking the question if maybe some in the society, if not out of moral concern, out of just aesthetics and concerns about taste, have decided that that pornography is kind of passé. Well, I'm not sure that's true. I'm afraid it's not. But I will tell you this. Apple Computers, Steve Jobs, is staking his company's future, at least in this respect, on the fact that they'll do more business without porn than with it. And that's what Eric Felton's talking about when he says that Steve Jobs is turning one of the most basic assumptions about technology on its head, which is if you don't allow porn, if you don't sell porn, if you're not complicit in the porn business, you're not going to make it on the World Wide Web. Very, very interesting. Because my guess is, given the track record, Apple figures it's going to make it. With my iPad right here at hand, I'm pretty sure they're right. iPhone, iPod, this is iMe. Ready to talk with you about this issue. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Michael's listening on WFIA. What do you think, Michael?
Well, you know, I really appreciate Steve Jobs' stance and what you have to bring to the table. I actually disagree. I don't think that a man becoming a father is really going to prevent him from stopping his pornography addiction or looking at porn. I think it's really boils down to more of a worldview. I just don't see a person with a secular worldview truly stopping at that point, nor even having the ability to stop. I think it really just comes down to a man's ability to compartmentalize and to separate the two, where it really takes the conviction of God and an understanding of the value of life to stop looking at porn or to not have that a part of your life or whatever else. So I really don't see fatherhood really coming into play. I mean, obviously this country has got to have a lot of fathers in it, and with the pornography industry being as big as it is, you can't tell me that a lot of the people buying porn or looking at it aren't fathers.
No, regrettably, Michael. Yeah, regrettably, I think you're absolutely right on that. And it's kind of talking about a different issue here. Steve Jobs and this whole story is really not about, and I regret to say, it's not about parenthood, meaning that dads don't look at pornography. You're absolutely right. The statistics mean that an incredible number of dads do, and God's judgment will be upon them for that. The point is that they do not want their children having access to it. That's really what Apple Computers is banking on here. That parents are going to think of the App Store as a friendlier place for the whole world and for their children in particular than if there are pornographic apps. Making it porn-free is a good business decision, they think, because parents are going to feel the natural protective instinct to protect their children. You know, Michael, your point about the incredible tenacious power of this sin is a very important point. And this is another really good way of getting at the issue that even though parenthood does change everything, and Michael, I don't know if you're a parent yet. I think if you are a dad or when you are a dad, the point made by Steve Jobs will certainly perhaps have a bit more traction. But when it comes to the decisive difference of being a parent makes, it is huge. And I'm going to stand on that argument. I'm absolutely convinced it's huge. You know, from personal experience, not only mine, but the people I know how big it is. But also, let me just tell you again, the number one most effective indicator as to how someone votes in a presidential election often comes down to whether or not they are parents with children in the home. It does make a big difference, but it's not a sanctifying difference. And Michael's call is a good reminder to get it. In fact, the only difference that changes the worldview from within is the new birth that comes through Jesus Christ, the sanctifying power of the Holy Spirit inside the life of the believer. That is all that will make the fundamental change in terms of the wanting to look at pornography. And even then, it's a struggle, one that we just have to be honest about, affecting many, many Christian men as well. One that is a scandal, however, to this culture and a scandal to the church. Steve Jobs, though, and Apple is betting the farm on the fact that its app store is going to sell more apps if they don't sell porn. And he thinks parenthood matters. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. We're discussing the issue of pornography, all of a sudden in the news, having to do with the exchange of emails between Ryan Tate of Gawker.com and Steve Jobs of Apple Computer. It's one of those things that just comes out of the blue. Nobody saw this coming. And so far as I know, there's never really been much conversation about pornography linked to the name of Steve Jobs. And now it is. And all kinds of conversation going on about it. Pages of the Wall Street Journal, for instance, simply because someone of his stature has finally said no to pornography, just in terms of the business that Apple Computers is doing through its App Store. Now, there's a whole lot going on here. By the way, just in terms of the technology here, I'll tell you, I am now a devoted user of an iPad. I have an iPhone and an iPod. And when the iPad came out, I thought, you know, I really don't need an iPad. I've got a Kindle. And I've got a laptop, and I'm pretty happy with all that, and I didn't think I needed an iPad. Well, I ended up with an iPad, and I'll tell you, it has taken over a whole lot of what I was dependent on other machines for. And I'd say 70 to 80% of what I need a laptop for has now been replaced with the iPad. I can just carry it with me, open it up, take care of business, email in particular, and web browsing, and there it is. And just given how much is spent in email time, it's a huge thing. And then, frankly, I love the reader on it. I love so many other things. I love the apps. And the reason I'm talking about this is because I think the App Store is the way of the future. I genuinely believe that what the iPad is telling us is that people are going to prefer apps to software. And that makes the App Store at Apple incredibly prime technological real estate. Just in terms of the digital superstore that iTunes is, that App Store is huge. And when you start thinking about the economic and commercial possibilities of that kind of a retail operation, you can imagine that if Apple Computers did allow pornographic apps, there would be pornographic apps by the thousands. And you know that that there are those who would wish to sell their pornographic products just that way. Now, there's no way that if one of these devices has a web browser that it's totally free of any potential for pornography. You can find it if you want to go look for it, but that's different than having an app for it. That's different than Apple actually becoming a purveyor by means of a commercial partnership by which they would take, say, you know, 30% of the app sales. That would put Apple in a very different moral position. That then at that point, they would not be creating a machine that persons could use to go find pornography. They would then be a company that profits from the sale of every one of those apps and everything that was sold through them. Given the power of pornography to enslave, it has become a massive multi-billion-dollar business. We have basically a pornography industrial complex in this country, and some estimate it may be the seventh largest major industry in America right now. And so there's a big no here. In other words, Apple is really making quite a statement. When they say no to this, they're saying no to potentially billions of dollars of income. They can't be doing that without a good reason. And this is where Eric Felton, writing at the Wall Street Journal, is probably right. It's probably not that that we should infer some tremendous moral commitment here. I don't want to minimize that. I'm just saying that's not the only reading here. It is, in all likelihood, the decision of Apple Computers that Americans are just going to feel a lot safer allowing their kids and others onto that app store and frankly, making purchases there if they know it's a safe place for kids in terms of pornography. So I'd say it's a safe place for kids in terms of everything, or safe place for adults, for that matter, for everything. But when it comes to pornography, that's a huge issue, and parents know it. That's exactly what Steve Jobs wrote in a very quick retort to Ryan Tate of Gawker.com when Ryan Tate said, I don't have a problem with porn. Porn is just fine. And in fact, in one of the strange twists in all this, this particular man accused Steve Jobs of imposing his personal morality on the App Store. Now, think about this. I wrote about this at my website at albertmuller.com. The article I published today on the difference being a parent makes when it comes to pornography is right at the very top of my site today at albertmuller.com. I make this point. Why is it that deciding not to sell pornography is imposing one's morality when supposedly deciding to sell pornography would then not be imposing one's morality? You know, that's absolutely ridiculous. That's one of those bricks that we throw at each other in this culture, saying you're imposing your morality. Let's be really, really clear. Everybody in this society, every parent, every child, every teacher, every principal, every postal delivery man has a morality that he's having to impose. And when it comes to the big issues of our day, you can't avoid imposing some morality. The question is not whether we're going to impose a morality. The question is, what kind of morality are we going to impose? The question is not, are we going to legislate morality? All legislation has a moral dimension to it, and every great moral issue in this country has some legislative application. The issue is not whether we're going to legislate morality. The question is, which morality are we going to legislate? The question is not, are we going to impose a morality? The question is, which morality are we going to impose? And this is a time for America to grow up. And it's a good time for believing Christians to say, you know, our worldview reminds us that every decision is moral, that every relationship is moral, and that our responsibility as Christians is to make certain that we understand that a morality is imposed upon us. And it's not imposed upon us merely by the state, merely by the culture. It is imposed upon us by our Creator, who said, this is good for you and this is bad for you. This is right and this is wrong. And that's a totally different worldview. It's amazing how conservative, however, many parents get the moment they do become parents. Many people have a fundamental change in the way they view the world the moment they become parents. And that is not just true of Christians. It seems to be true worldwide, across cultures, across time, across racial, ethnic, educational, economic kinds of barriers. The reality is, when you become a parent, you become responsible, and your instincts change. And that responsibility of being a parent changes everything. You know, folks, one of the reasons why on this program I talk about the cost, the social and personal cost of the delay of marriage and the delay of parenthood is precisely this. It's a part of what God has made us to be. Becoming a husband or a wife, and then becoming a father or a mother, changes life. It requires us to grow up. These institutions of marriage and then, of course, of the family with parenthood, these become means of grace in our lives. They become means of growing into adulthood and full adult responsibility. And the reality is that when the larger world, especially those on the secular left, those on the condescending liberal end of the spectrum who look at families with children and call them breeders, well, hey, that's where the action is in creating the civilization of the future. It's not so much being done on the campus of Ivy League universities as it is in the kitchen right now. Thank God for that. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Let me let you in on something I learned a long time ago doing this program, and that is that when it comes to pornography, there is an immediate interest, and there's a tragedy behind that. There's an immediate interest when we talk about it on the program because there are so many families that are affected by it. There are so many people who are entrapped by it, and there are so many people, frankly, who are involved in it, and there's a sense of crisis on this. And, you know, quite frankly, we need to keep talking about it because the moment we allow this issue to kind of fall off of our cultural and moral screen, and that's important not just for individuals and families but for local churches, the moment this falls off of our screen, it just takes a greater hold on the society. We're the people who every once in a while have to look at each other and say, we don't do this. You know, we're the people that need to remind each other as parents, it is our responsibility to protect our children. And that means right now, parents, this particular news story is a reminder to you that even though the App Store, at least for now, may be free of porn, your children are vulnerable at every single digital intersection. And even as the App Store is not going to be selling explicitly pornographic apps, the reality is there's nothing to prevent one of your son's friends from sending a sexually explicit image to a cell phone. There's nothing to prevent an unrestricted web browser from going just about anywhere on the web, and just about anywhere includes millions and millions of places you do not want your kids to go. You know, I talk about it on this program because I'm still stunned at the numbers that are reported by parents, the numbers of parents who allow children, teenagers and children, to have computers with internet access in their rooms to look at alone. Let me just tell you, and let me just give a little word here to single moms. Single moms, I love you. God bless you. As you're doing the brave work, just understand that when you've got a teenage son and he's got unfiltered access to the internet, you've got a huge problem. And if you're looking down there at that bedroom door thinking, not my kid, please, mom, understand your kid. You do not want to leave him vulnerable to that temptation. And if there's not a dad to step in and say, okay, Tiger, I know just what the temptation is, and you're not going to have the laptop in the room, then, mom, you got to do that. And when it comes to protecting daughters, you know, all of a sudden, every single male is evaluated by a father, hopefully by a mother as well, as to whether or not he's the type who would do this kind of thing. You want that settled before you want him to get anywhere close to your daughter. It's a wild world, isn't it? It's a sinful world. It's a Genesis 3 world. That's why Christians are ones that know we have to have our eyes open and trust the Lord and do what God put us here to do. Being a parent does matter. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.